Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Griese, and it is day before Thanksgiving 2014, and we are here today to try to count our blessings one by one by one, and what a difficult thing that it is to do so many times when adversity smacks us right in the face. This past week, we had a terrible tragedy, I believe, in the coaching ranks, as one of our best coaches in America got asked to step down. And I have asked him to be on the show, and recently, just a little bit ago, he said that his counsel will not allow this at this time. We'll have him later. Coach Randy Blumendahl, who is one of the best men, best people, best coaches in the land. And once again, it's one of these things we don't understand, but it's one of those things that happens all too quite frequently now in the sporting world and education world, and it just does not make sense. I wanted to say that this is the UR Tennis Network, and very quickly, we have three shows each week. Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces, has moved to Tuesday at 11 o'clock. Usually, it was Monday at noon, but check UR Tennis listings. Jason Haynes will be on with the College Connection here 2 hours from right now. And then J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis continues to be a big hit. Over 2,000 people on our coaches, actually, on the We Coach Tennis Facebook line, and J.P. Weber's just doing a great job. His show yesterday was dedicated, really, talking to about four or five coaches about Coach Blumendahl and what happened this last week out of the blue, and it's just something that coaches need to talk about and we need to be engaged with. I've asked some coaches to call in today, and we will get to you. I see already a couple coaches are on the line. But I wanted to say this, UR Tennis Network, if you do want to call in, it's area code 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. My website is chuckcriese.net, K-R-I-E-S-E, chuckcriese.net. and you can listen to every show over the past 2.5 years that we've had, and we try to remind you that our mission is to stand up and to speak out and to say those things that need to be said, and what other time than now is this needed? We need to stand up and to speak out. Don't stay covered up with just cliches and facts and wait till something is popular to say whether it's right or whether it's wrong. You need to stand up and to speak out. We always ask you to address issues, not people. Stay professional. But no one can find fault. We need your opinions. We need debating at every level, and we need to get the issues on the table. And I think it's I wanted to start out by saying that, you know, a long time ago when I first got into coaching, there was a saying that I read, Viktor Frankl, from the book was called In Search of Self, I see we've got Dr. Cronodal waiting. He probably will be able to tell me in a minute, or one of the coaches that are waiting on the line. But years ago, I remember watching Viktor Frankl was in a German concentration camp during World War II. And he said that it was about him playing music in his head and how he kept himself sane. And he said when he was put in solitary, he listened to all the Mozart and Beethoven over and over and over again in his head, and it kept him sane. But the quote was that I remember so much, and I used it always in my coaching from the first days, was that adversity introduces a man to himself. And we say these things, and we have these little sayings, but we really don't know what they mean until adversity really does hit us and hits us square in the face. And it's one thing when it hits us, and I wanted to say that I've been amazed at the strength that I've seen when it does hit people square in the face sometimes. We're always shocked, and we say to ourselves, how could this person be so strong? Well, I think that I've come to the conclusion that you don't have a choice. Control is completely taken away from you. And you have to get you either get bitter or you get better. You either fix the blame or you fix the problem. You basically have to decide, am I going to wallow in my own belly aching or my own sorrow, or am I going to get better? And if you're on the outside, we look at somebody who's suffering. I remember watching my mother die of cancer. And the last 3 months, we used to get jump in bed with her and hug her and hold her and things like that. And one time I asked her, I said, Mom, how can you do this? She would lay in bed and praise God and while she was dying. And she said, well, what choices do I have? I either, you know, I've been praising God my whole life now. I mean, am I going to stop just because of this position? I said, well, what do you think? She said, I'd like to have more time, but my two choices are to either denounce God or praise God. I decide to praise Him. And it was very moving. And I saw my best friend at age 35 die, married my sister, and that was terribly painful as I walked out of the hospital every day, seeing him die of colon cancer. The emotions are just beyond belief. This last week, one of the Kansas City Chiefs players, his quote was in the paper about, I've got a new battle to fight now. I remember Arthur Ashe when he announced that he was dying. I remember that and how we were all so shocked at the bravery. Walter Payton, all of these, I wanted to say this, that in all of these, we look and we say, could we ever be the strength when tragedy hits us or when something hits us? You know, and older people, when they get older, my wife's grandmother died this summer. She just said, oh, I'm ready to go. And she was sort of like, you know, life, it gets tougher than the prospects, you know, when you get a lot of things. She was 89 years old, and her faith was so strong. But adversity, I saw, and I told my friend, and I'm relating this to my friend Randy, because he sent me a text this morning that was just incredibly powerful. It was just so powerful, and was just very, very few words, but he is sort of at this place where he is giving thanks for the blessings that are coming his way with this tremendous hardship on he and his family, and it's so sad. But I told him this. I said, I remember one of the fathers from the Benghazi incident, one of the fathers whose son had been killed over there, probably needlessly, and probably, you know, wherever the politics are, they, you know, they can spin it one way or another, but it sure did look like, you know, it didn't have to happen. But I remember watching that and being so outraged, but then seeing him say, you know what, we're just thankful to God for, you know, the time we've had, and this is the way our son wanted to live his life. We don't wish bad things on anybody. And I go, whoa. And I told Randy that as time has gone by, it's been 2 years, you forget the hoopla, the thing, but that statement and the way that the father presented the courage to adversity sticks out in my mind. It's paramount, the way that it sticks out in my mind. So, you know, with that, I, you know, Coach Blumenthal is one of the best coaches in America, one of the best men in America. I wrote an article this week, and it's going around Facebook and some of the tennis things, that says, you know, he's guilty of the pursuit of excellence. And basically he's guilty of working kids to the limit and beyond their limit, which good coaches do. He's guilty of doing what Tom Landry's quote said, that the job of the coach is to get people to do things they don't want to do in order to have things they want to have. But in our society, we're so caught up into people's comfort and making sure everybody has a nice involvement and a nice activity that we really pull back from pushing people to their limits. But Coach Blumenthal knows how to get the most out of people, and he's done it for 20-some years. And I would want my son under him, and anybody who's in tennis would want their children under him. Anybody who wants an education would want their children under him, because average will not be what happens. The youngster, boy or girl, will end up becoming the best that they can become. And this message has been lost. I did want to talk about adversity here and then go to a couple of our callers. But, you know, adversity introduces a person to themselves. Definitely, that's absolutely true, and it's coming true. I got a text this morning. I've talked through the whole situation with Coach, and there's so many things you want to retaliate at first. You're just angry at the betrayal. The betrayal is the thing that is just so, so hard if you're a teacher, because people don't get it. Students don't get it until they get to a certain age where they are old enough to get it. I mean, the reason we have always drafted 18, 19, 20-year-old kids into the military is because that's where they're most impressionable. That's where they're most formidable. This is when they need the guidance. This is when they really need leaders who call upon the king and the queen in them, not the little boy and the little girl. This is where they call upon them to step up and to stand out, not just to fit into a mold, but to step up and to stand out. And so anyhow, he was going through this whole scenario of stuff, and we had a talk yesterday, and he said, basically, I realize there's two things that I must do. I must do what I can always to protect my family name. You never bring shame on the family name. He said that's the thing that worries and bothers me the most, is what people out there think in the sports world and those things. But then to protect my family. And there are three things we as men need, and I'll say men, maybe women too, but men absolutely. I am a man. And any man listening out there knows that we need respect. We need to protect and to provide. We need respect. We need to protect and to provide for our families. These are needs. These are not wants. These are not likes. These are needs. We respect of far the work we do, the integrity for what we do, the character for what we do is what we need central and foremost. Then to protect our family and to provide for our family are central to what it means to be a man. And women are absolutely on the same parallel as men. Women are absolutely equals, but they are different. And we all know they're different. I can't tell a woman to be like a man. A woman can't tell a man. I don't want to even go there. But I will tell you, as a man, we need respect that we have to earn. It is not given. And you do it through hard work and accomplishments and by suffering and by sacrifice and through consistency of doing the right thing over and over and over again. Respect. Protect. We have this inner need to protect our families and to provide for our families. So Randy was saying, you know, I need to protect my family. I need to provide for my family. I want to never bring shame on my family name that my father and my grandfather gave to me. It means everything. And I said, that's very, very simple. But this is an absolute fact. Those who love you and those who know you well, this is not even a option to do anything else. This is not compromised in anywhere. Those who love you and those who know you, they respect you, and that they, for the man you are, not the position that you have. We think that our respect comes to us through the position we have. It is not. That is something that's changed in the last 50 years. The respect comes from earned as the man, the woman that you are. So he said in a text, simple text this morning, he goes, I realize that if I strike out or if I think evil or bad thoughts toward these people where I feel like I've been wronged in any way at all, right or wrong, if I think that at all, I am on that same par, same plateau, or I'm doing to someone else what they had done to me. And I basically decided at that moment, I just said, he's gotten to that level where he's realized that when you the ultimate control is giving up control. The sadness of life is that these things that come to us that are so tragic, they're so tragic, and we don't think that we can get through them. This is where we get to. We realize we have to give up control. My very, very good friend, Mike Springlemeyer, I call him he grew up in Iowa, German heritage, just like me, very, very tough background, tough families, so similar, six kids in the family and everything. One time he said to me, here's what messes people up, he said, if you start having a lot of success and you think it's all about you, of course the obvious happens. You get full of yourself and you self-destruct. You either self-sabotage or you can't carry the responsibility of the successes. There's no heavier burden than a great opportunity. There's no heavy, more pressure than having success. He says you'll self-destruct if you think it's about you. So when you have success, you say, Lord, what do you want me to do with this gift that you've given me? And then you cherish it, you nurture it, you take care of it, you do those things that you need to do, and you continue to have success, and you carry the responsibility. The other thing he said is that when you have failure, you ask, or setbacks, these adversity, these times of adversity, you say, God, what are you trying to teach me through this message? What are you trying? This is a tough one, but I need to praise you in all things, and I need to praise you, and I'm asking you what are you trying to teach me with this message, with this moment? And I'm going to get to our guest here. Got four or five already that have called in, you know, out of respect for this wonderful, wonderful man that we all love and respect, Randy Blumenthal. And, you know, the interesting thing is that he is not a human doing. He's a human being, a great human being. And the adversity introduces a person to themselves. He's got to take it just like there is a higher calling for him now, and maybe God does not want him in the coaching world. That's a tragedy. I mean, we've taken the teachers out of the classroom. We're taking the coaches off the playing field. I'm going to go to Coach. I think I've got Coach Dan Vonk on here. Let me see if this is Coach Vonk, because he's got an interesting story. And says, Coach Vonk, is this you?
Yeah, Coach Chuck, Dan. It is. How are you doing? Yeah.
It's you. Coach Dan, you've been on the line there. I've got a few other callers I'm going to go to here in a second. They're friends of Randy's as well. But I think by now you know that Randy lost his position this last week at Indiana University, where he's worked for 10 years. And if you look at it, that's probably 3,500 days of blood, sweat, and a lot of tears in giving yourself to children. You've been a teacher and a coach for now almost 30 years. Dan, you survived cancer where you basically, they said you could die. You had a leg completely, the bone taken out. You had that replaced. You were in a body cast for 18 months. Is that correct, Coach?
About a year in the about 6 months in the body cast. Didn't walk for about 13 months, Chuck.
Okay, about 13 months. And you know, and to those of you listening, I've had Coach Vonk on before, but there's probably few people that do a better job in the United States with young people and teaching them how to get through adversity. You've had a lot of adversity yourself. Can you just talk a little bit about the mindset of adversity and where you need to go to? And then I want to ask you about taking the teacher out of the classroom. You had a couple great ideas about what we ought to be doing in our high school. Well, I don't want to go there too deeply, but basically how we are, unfortunately, taking the teachers out of the classroom. We have systems instead of teachers in the classroom. Go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, Chuck. You know, first of all, I don't know Randy personally. I know him through you. I know that the years that we've spent together, you've always had such praise for him and for the job that he did. You know, and of course, as a tennis coach and a teacher, I obviously feel for him and everything. But, you know, I think when you're going through something like this, just like you've been speaking of, the first thing, you know, that comes to my mind is you really learn the concept of one day at a time, because it's just something that, you know, you get through this day and, you know, you ask for help and you get through the next day. And eventually, you know, time does help to ease the burden of you and everything. But one of the other things that really strikes me when I think about the adversity that I've gone through in my life is just the kindness that I've always received from other people when I've been going through those hard times. You know, recently I'm going through a hard time, and I was just reflecting today about how grateful I am again about who there's a handful of special people in my life that have been there for me. You know, a lot of them are the same ones that were there back in 93 when I was diagnosed with the bone cancer. And you really find out who your friends are, and you really, you know, as you said, you kind of find out what you're made of. It's but you don't get there alone. You get there, there's other people looking out for you. You have to count your blessings. You have to stay positive. And, you know, you just in terms of, you know, the eve of Thanksgiving, it sounds like Randy has already discovered that, and he is giving thanks, and he is very grateful. But, you know, thank God for friends. Thank God for people who look out for you, and you just have to do it one day at a time. You just learn how to get through it, and you adjust, and you adapt, and you stay positive, you know.
Well, those are great words. We have a coach. I think this might be Coach Rex here. Let me see. Is that you, Coach Rex? Are you on the line?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
This is, guys, Coach Rexy Karma, one of the best coaches in America, and I'll tell you why. It's not just that his Louisville Cardinals top 20 in the country every year, but he started with nothing. You had a tennis club, I believe. You built it from nothing. I think you were a volunteer coach, did not get paid your first year, and you built it up at your alma mater from nothing. And you've seen a big change, Rex, in sports here. But first, if you could just speak to the adversity about that and counting our blessings one by one, but your insights maybe about, and then I want to ask you about, you've been around athletic departments enough. Coach Funk, you're still on the line. You can jump in, too, if you want to. But go ahead, Coach Rex. What could you add?
I tell you, Chuck, that my first 4 years, I feel like I paid out more than I received. A newspaper reporter asked me why I worked the first 4 years. I go, because of the basketball tickets for Louisville. But I'm so honored to be on the line with you and the other coaches, and especially Randy Blumenthal. To me, one of the top coaches around. When my son had a big question about changing his grip on his forehand, I talked to two coaches, and two coaches only. One of those two coaches was Coach Randy Blumenthal. I trust his knowledge, his expertise immensely. What he does with players, he takes them from one level to a whole nother level, but also he's got a gift of taking them from boy to man. That's what I respect so much about Randy.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I would trust my son with him 100 days in a row. And and we hate to say that it might be throwbacks, but Coach Rex, you've been through so much there also. I was in the athletic department at Clemson for 33 years, and I saw so many coaches fired over that time, or times things would happen at tough times. But here's what would happen. When a coach was in trouble, it was almost like they had leprosy. People actually would see them in the hall and turn around and go in the other direction. And I remember one old track coach sort of sniffing himself, wow, I didn't know that I drug in that much smell with me or something. But when a coach is in trouble, people sort of run and hide. And they do not speak up for the person till it's popular to speak up for them. We jump on the bandwagon of what we think is out there. And would you say I'm true here? I mean, what is the deal with us? I mean, why don't we show more? Why don't we stand up and speak out more, Rex?
It's tough. I was talking to this situation with Randy, with my wife, because she knows how much I esteem Coach Blumenthal, she says it reminds her of what's going on with the public school system. 30 or 40 years ago, they let the teacher teach and discipline and control the classroom. Now the teacher is the most controlled person in the classroom, and I always told her, I said, college sports is one of the final vestiges of true education and learning that there is in America, and that's why I'm in it. And you could start seeing that type of organizational control creeping into Division I athletics, it's going to be tough in the sense that with you know, players' rights and things continuing to grow, which could be good at times, but it's tough for 18-year-olds to make judgment calls. But the main thing is, I hope that universities continue and and grow to trust the leaders, the administrators, the coaches that they have over these young people and support them, you know. And I really feel that's the best case scenario for the student athlete, when the administration supports its coach.
Well, that was very, very well said. Coach Vonk, quickly there, in high school, you've been an educator. How many years have you coached now and taught? How many years have you been a teacher and high school coach?
Well, I'm in my 29th year teaching right now, and I've been a high school coach for about 24 of those years, 24, 25.
What's going on?
Well,
what's
you know, we're being we're being dominated by tests. We're being basically told what curriculum we have to teach, how we teach it, everything else. And it is part of the problem that you're talking about is Big Brother, or whatever you want to call it, is basically taking over our classroom. I hear time and time again from veteran teachers, and actually new teachers, that come in and say, you know, it's not what I thought it was. If they just let me teach, I could accomplish a lot. But, you know, teachers, it's not so much about teaching anymore. It's about a lot of the other bureaucratic stuff that's going on, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know, is this because they don't believe in the coach, the teacher that they put into the field, or is this by design? Is this, like you said, Big Brother? Is this the top-down management? You've heard me speak about it against it a lot. I dislike whether it's the USTA or the ITA or any bureaucracy dictating down to people. It cuts the legs out from under those people in the trenches, the teachers, the coaches, the tournament directors. Everybody, when they have a system or they create a system that you're supposed to adhere to, sounds to me like socialism. I call it socialist tennis. You know, I mean, it's not capitalist tennis. And I mean, is it because they don't trust us? Or is it a bigger thing than that? What do you think, Coach?
You know, Chuck, I don't know for sure, but I think, you know, a lot of times we end up in education teaching to the middle and you know, rather than untethering people and letting them fly as high as they can, we end up teaching to the middle and trying to bring the bottom up, which isn't always bad, but, you know, it really handcuffs. It really handcuffs teachers. I know that, you know, in the state of Georgia now, part of our new teacher evaluation is students get to evaluate us, you know, and we're evaluated by...
High school students get to evaluate the teacher now. Well,
there's a portion of our evaluation.
Oh, 10 years, well, you know, probably the older... principals, the older athletic directors who've been around probably say, it's okay, it's just a formality. But the problem is that when some of the younger people who are used to this get into these positions and they completely empower the students or the athletes over the coaches and over the teachers, I mean, we've got serious problems. Then we don't have first of all, your good people are not going to want to get into coaching and things like that. But this is a big problem. Top-down management does not work. We're going to speak to it more in a couple weeks. This is about counting our blessings. Rex, could you count your blessings one by one by one right now? Tomorrow's Thanksgiving. Count a few of them for us and tell us. You started the program from nothing. You've been top 20 school now for several years. Louisville tennis is synonymous with excellence. I don't think I ever got a win over you actually at Louisville when I was at Clemson.
Well, Chuck, I tell you, I think the blessings start first and foremost with my relationship with Jesus Christ, and when I committed my life to Him and revered the Bible and made that like the guidebook to my life. That's when the blessings and the satisfaction and also the comfort through the downtimes. There's been many down times in my career, and it's been the Lord that sustains me and teaches me through it. So really, that's the greatest blessing in my life, and then obviously my wife and my children, really, and then the career comes in after that.
Well, as those are the priorities, I mean, my father used to preach, God, family, job, God, family, job, God, family, job. And then I heard a preacher one time say a couple years back that we worship our work, we work at our play, and then we play at our worship. I thought that was pretty profound in our society today. We worship our work, and we work at our play, but we play at our worship. So we've got probably the God family job part not quite wrong right here. So, guys, I got to go to the commercial, but I do want to come back and talk about counting our blessings. And if you can stay on, stay on. But, Rex, I know how busy you are with your family and the tournament, you know, and everything. But thanks if you can stay on, you know, a minute. We're going to go to commercial. We'll be right back with the
Sure. Sure.
Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I wanted to remind you of our 2014 competition weekend at the Citadel, December 20 and 21st. Bring your child out and learn many ways of competing and how to help your child fall into their best style of play. Go to ChuckCreasy.net or call area code 864-710-6973. For more information, that's competition weekend, December 20 and 21. Network. And my guest today I've had on the line, and the other, if you could just hang on, I'll try to get you on here in a second. I wanted to continue talking to Rexy Karma, one of the best coaches in America, and Coach Dan Vonk, and we're talking about the terrible situation this week with our coaching ranks losing Coach Randy Blumenthal and what he's been through. And Rex, I appreciate your speaking up in your priorities there about your Thanksgiving. But I read this morning. Well, my wife gave it to me. But listen to this, guys, and everybody out there. It says, to protect your thankfulness, you must remember that you reside in a fallen world where blessings and sorrows intermingle freely. That means ups and downs are expected all the time. A constant focus of adversity can defeat many of us. We walk through the day brimming that may be brimming with beauty and brightness, only seeing the grayness if our thoughts are not focused right, neglecting our practices of every daily looking to God will not allow us to see what is obvious in the blessings. How precious are those who remember to thank God at all times. They can walk through the darkest days of the joy with joy in their heart, knowing the light of God's presence is shining on them. Rejoice in this day which I have made. I am your steadfast companion, is the scripture. And, I mean, those are powerful words. And I wanted to ask you a little bit, Rex, where are we going with tennis in the United States? I want to give you sort of a broad brush there. And if you were in charge of tennis, you had 1 month and everything, you had executive order, you could take a pen and sign executive orders of tennis, Rex, for 1 month. Where would you start and what would you do to get us ignited again as we are lethargic right now and not living up to our potential?
Well, one of the first things is I'd hire Randy Blumenthal to help me. That's one. And two, I would really kind of start sponsoring more players like France. France does a good job of incorporating 1,300 of its clubs to help them identify the player. So each club will submit someone that'll have 1,300, then they'll pare it down to 600, then it'll go down to 300, and they'll probably, in essence, the last time I talked to somebody, they'll partially or fully sponsor about 100 juniors in each age group and bring their coach with them so they don't separate the player and their familiar coach. So I think they're, with the money that the U.S. Open makes, the money of these entry fees and these junior tournaments going on every day all over America, 50 states a year, 50 states of the United States, you have a lot of resources for player development. I think I saw in an article a week ago, $2 million in player development in America. And I would start sponsoring more of these players, helping them train financially, and bringing them with their mentor. Do not separate the junior and their coach/mentor relationship.
Now, USTA would probably say they're doing this or they're in the process of moving in that direction. They would say that we've got our training centers out there. We've copied a lot of things that maybe they're doing overseas. You know, first of all, Rex, you know me, I've always argued that no, we shouldn't be copying anybody. Maybe even we should use the good examples, is what mm-hmm. you're saying. But the USTA would say this. The one difference is that you're saying do not separate that lifeline of the coach that's been working with the youngster for years. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, Coach Creasy, that is like taking a fish out of its familiar waters, like a fish that swims to certain corals. You take that fish and you put it in the fishbowl. Well, it's the same fish, but you've totally taken the environment that fish thrived in away. So now you've got a peculiar situation. One of the most important, obviously, if you want to bring them to a training center, great. I think those have a function, but there's a reason why you picked that junior, because they were thriving before they got to you. What were the things that made them thrive? Their mentor, maybe a parent, maybe a club. Let's try to bring as much of that with them as possible, and we need to sponsor these kids and have them play in the COSAT circuit, bunches of them in South America on the clay. Let them go to Europe and the European circuit. Let them go to Australia, New Zealand in December and January, where it's is flaming hot over there. Let's bring them by the dozens in every age group, and let's see how they can function there. The USTA could afford that.
Yeah, and everybody agrees they could, and they would probably agree that they could, and they probably believe that they're doing this already. But the point you're making is true, that they cut the, I don't know, it's not the umbilical cord, they cut the best support system off when they take the person away from their coach, and they lose the coach gets mad, the kid gets weaker, the parents get confused. Why aren't we doing that already? Why do we separate the coach from the player, Rex?
I'm not exactly sure why they did that. I'm hoping they don't think they've got the magic wand of tennis there. But I tell you, when then those personal coaches that they bring from home, they know what buttons to push. They know how this player responds. They know how to get this player up. They know how to calm this player down. You shuffle them to a brand new coach who has a completely different style, and sometimes the players, the juniors themselves, are resistant to that change. They're thinking, well, I got to number one in a country in the 14s with this, and this guy that I don't even know is making me change my grip, making me change my position on the court, making me change my style. My other coach wouldn't have done that. So I really think the USA, I'm not saying they don't need to be involved, but they need to work in conjunction with the pivotal person that helped create this phenomenal junior. They need to work together as a team.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm going to come back and ask you about what you would do in college now if you had the brush. But I'm going to ask Coach Vonk, what would you do to change? Coach, we have 350,000 youngsters participating in high school tennis. Only 23,000 right now are tournament players. That's 7%. 7 out of 100 play 5 tournaments or more a year. We have an after-school activity right now going on. We don't have a sport going on. Coach Vonk, what would you do if you had control? You had executive action. You didn't have to go through anybody and say this is what needs to happen.
Well, I think from the high school level, if you're talking from a rural small town perspective, you and I have talked a lot about how tennis is missing out on the rural areas, and I think what we have to do from my perspective there is we have to make tennis more accessible to kids in the small towns and to the parents, and affordable and accessible. I would bring in tournaments. I think the USTA could help by bringing in tournaments to other places and not make it to where we have to drive to the major cities.
I want to make a point. Why don't you create tournaments, Coach? Why don't you create tournaments yourself instead of them bringing it in?
Well, personally, one of the biggest problems there is that, one, of course, we would have to go through the U.S. sanction, USTA sanction.
Right. They don't let you. They don't let the ground troops work,
yeah,
is my point. Go ahead with your paintbrush. Paint a bigger picture yet. So that's top-down management again. It's socialism again. Go ahead.
Yes, again. And, of course, with the bureaucracy, one of the other things that I would do is I would give the coaches free rein to coach year-round. As I've told you before, as a high school coach, I'm very limited. It's probably about 5 months of the year is all that I can really work with groups of my players. The rest of the time is basically time off. So about half of the year, my kids are dependent upon going somewhere else for high quality coaching. We need people in different areas that are high quality coaches that have access and can develop programs and that can work in communities and everything else. A lot of times in the smaller towns, in the high school settings, in the rural communities, the high school coach is the only one that has an incentive to develop players. And, of course, we have full-time jobs and other things that we do. And we need people in those areas that have an incentive to develop the game in those rural areas. But I would take advantage of that. As much bureaucracy as possible, because believe me, there's a ton of it that's holding us back from being all that we can do.
Let me ask Coach Vonk, to your knowledge, is there any kind of rule that prohibits a piano player or a trombone player from playing as much music as they want and practicing as hard as they want? Is there any limit put on band or orchestra?
I don't believe there is, Chuck.
Okay. Is there any put on the debate team practicing debating?
No.
Is there any put on your top science students or your top math students that tells them they can't study as much as
Absolutely
they want?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
Is
not.
There any restriction to you meeting with your students in your classes that you teach extra hours after school if they need help with subjects?
No, I can give as much of my time
well,
as I want
Coach E. Karma, the two things they put in there about our good friend and one of the greatest coaches in America, what were those guys thinking? They will never understand probably what opportunity they missed. First of all, it's pretty tough playing against his team, wasn't it, Coach? That his guys
oh.
know how to compete.
Playing Indiana, you have to be mentally, physically, emotionally, strategically prepared every time you got on a court with them. It was a war, but made my players better.
And every team out there, it doesn't do that, do they? Most people just think it's forehands and backhands. It's much more, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. A lot of coaches sometimes think it's just recruiting. Just recruit the right people, then you're golden, and let them work at their own pace. But
keep everybody happy. Let's just put a talented group out there, and let's just have fun, and everything will work out. It's not that. It's the same message I've got from other coaches I've talked to. In your knowledge at the university level, is there any restriction put on the band or the music departments from practicing as much as they want?
Not that I know of. I think,
is there any for
think our sports are the only ones that have that, really. Our athletes are the only ones that are monitored.
The thing that was, to me, ridiculous was when I read the release, and it makes you look, you might as well held up a 7-Eleven the way it makes you look. You know, the violations or so-called violations were you worked kids too hard and for too long. Is that accurate? That's basically what it said in different words. I don't want to go there too much. I don't want to jeopardize anything he's doing at this time. But is this ridiculous? When is this a crime to work kids too long and too hard? Well, we know the rules came in 1992, but even if that were true, do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with all of the 8-hour weeks, the 20-hour weeks, the 4-hour week restrictions, obviously some days that's all you want to work, but other days you'd like to do it more, but unfortunately, you got to turn off the lights when they tell you to turn off the lights.
Yeah, and my argument always has been, I coached in the old era where we weren't on a clock. I always said, if you are, you need to be like the boss who just works until you get the job done, not like an hourly employee that clocks in and clocks out. Well, my hour's over, okay. In the old days, we literally, Rex, could say, oh, the backhands don't look good enough. Let's get them right, boys. And then we'll go. And we basically could get them done. You could get it done, and players would improve. But let's go to college tennis. So where, if you were in charge, you had a pen, you could write the rules, where would you go with college tennis to for a resurgence? And you know, regardless of whether it's was something I believe in or not, Rex, you go ahead and say what your ideas are.
Well, I mean, Coach Randy had it right when he said that we need to split the seasons. One semester needs to be focused on individual and the other team. And also, we need to shorten up the match but have more matches. I like the idea of having four singles and one doubles playing two out of three sets with regular scoring each and all counting 1 point, and the match will be over in two and a half hours. Then you could play two matches a day. So in essence, with the same 25 match day limit, you could technically play 50 team matches if you want to go double header for all 25. So you actually end up, the players end up getting more matches, but the matches in itself would last the same length as a singles match, but with regular scoring.
Very, very good. And, you know, you, Coach Blumenthal, in his genius and his understanding of what it takes to make a player, he said that format is not the same as scoring system. We've been attacking both of them and dismantling our game going after the scoring system. And I think that any lover of tennis will say that. The format, Rex, I'm with you. I wouldn't care what format we used out there as long as we honor and preserve the scoring system. I've had my heels dug in more than anybody, but I will always have it dug in because of the scoring system, because to cheapen the scoring system cheapens the game. And we have chess right now. We don't need to make it into checkers. But I like your idea. Two matches in a day, you know, Louisville plays Purdue or Kentucky or somebody, you could play doubleheader on the big matches, and then other teams would get a chance. You could play two different teams, smaller teams could play Louisville in one day. So that's
you know, really, I was thinking, Chuck, just have like a festival, meaning like invite five teams: Indiana, Citadel, Kentucky, Vandy, Purdue. Everybody plays each other once on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, have matches going on all day, invite the fans, invite the family members, invite the friends to stay in and watch all of as many matches as they can, and it will be like a conference tournament every weekend you play this. So obviously you don't need to play every weekend, and the following weekend is a weekend full of training. Then every other weekend they play five dual matches, and on 3 days, and then the following weekend is always a training weekend. So the ADs would love it because they'll stay in school. They won't miss as much classes, and it'll be cheaper. Instead of going to one place one at a time, you could go to one place and get five dual matches in. It'll be cheaper to the athletic departments.
Rex, would you agree that the fall should be the time for the team season, the piggyback football game weekends, and then the rest of the season? This was one of Randy's ideas. The rest of the season should be individual and double, pretty much.
I'm open to that. Yeah, I'm open to that, but I just I've never piggybacked off of a football game, so I don't have any experience with that. But I definitely feel like it should be split.
Yeah, we wouldn't have any trouble with the crowd. That's the big thing. But here's the point: tennis is an individual sport, and we need to look for team opportunities with our individual for golf and for swimming and for diving and for track and field. We've tried to make it a team sport and market individual opportunities. I think we've been barking up the wrong tree. The big thing that you're saying is the biggest idea is separating the seasons, and you could have two sports for the same amount of money. ADs would love it, and I think if we get the seasons right, we can go. Guys, I got to go, and I'm sorry I didn't get the other callers in on today's show, and I wanted to take my hats off all of us. Send a line or call Coach Randy Blumenthal and tell him how much you appreciate his work, his effort. One of the greatest coaches in America, one of the best teachers in America, and most of the time genius is not appreciated up on the front side. I always said that if it's successful, they'll say genius. If it's average, they'll say, oh, he's eccentric. If they don't understand it and he's not quite successful yet, they'll say, wow, what was that? That's the wrong deal. And I just don't think some people get it. They don't understand excellence now. But thanks very much for you guys, Rex, and for Dan Vaughn.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. He's just made in America. Made in America. Made in America.
And it's Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. And our thoughts and prayers go out to Coach Blumenthal and his family this week. And genius is never recognized up front, or everybody would have it. Most of the time, people look back on people of depth and character and say, what were they doing? What were they doing? And then they go, whoa, that was special, and we missed the boat. And a lot of people are missing the boat right now, and we know that Coach will come back in a great way. I hope he'll stay in tennis. I want to thank Coach Rexy Karma, Coach Dan Vonk, and everyone else who listened today. And again, it is Thanksgiving, and let's count our blessings one by one by one, and remember that adversity will introduce us to ourselves if we thank God for both the tough times and the good. See you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.